Yeah! Film Vault. Yes, indeed, it's the Film Vault. Welcome, everyone. That's Anderson. Yep. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Top 5 overbearing mothers. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. Very timely.
Overbearing moms.
Was this your pick?
Yeah. I picked it.
Nice.
Yeah, we were looking for a topic, and I'm like, you know what? We've done moms, I believe, but we've
years
never done
ago,
overbearing
ago.
Moms. And you know what?
This is a specific subtrope of mothers.
I don't have an overbearing mom, but they do make for rich characters.
Yes.
And that's unfortunate for the mothers out there that would like to see themselves reflected on the silver right. screen. And
shown
and
three-dimensionally.
But it'll be make for a fun list. And I got a good solid list as well as a very solid also rants.
Yes, it ended up being very fruitful. Very fruitful. A lot of fun characters. Like you said, to that point, I have several clips.
Oh, shit.
And all 5 of mine nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Mm-hmm. 5 for 5.
Yeah, I saw that. That came up quite a bit. I almost tried
They're juicy roles. They're juicy roles.
I almost tried to have all 5 of mine be nominated or winners, but I decided to say fuck that.
I'll be honest. 1 of mine I swapped out simply so I could have 5.
Hey. That's stupid. Hey, I'd like to thank everyone. This is the last week we will be doing the show with our old janky board, which is down to only 3 channels that work, and we can no longer hear the music that you guys all just enjoyed. This is the last week because thanks to the success of our Film Vault Drive shirt drive, we are able to purchase a brand new expensive board.
Right.
So Logan did that.
Procured by Logan himself.
If I find out, what do we do if we find out Logan's using the board for anything else other than this show? What do we do?
Well, it lives here at the studio.
That's true.
I'm not lugging that thing back and forth.
Do we have cameras on in the studio? Do we know that
nanny cam here in the old studio? Aside from that, I figure it's going to be a good thing. It'll allow us to, among other things, do something we wanted to for a long, long time, which is start up our Sniff Tracks again.
Mm.
Film Vault commentaries along with popular and bad movies.
How does that tie into the shirts?
No, it ties into the mixer.
Oh, the mixer will allow us to do that. Yes, we can do Man on the Street stuff again. We never did that.
No, we didn't, but we could start it up for sure. More likely Sniff Tracks.
Also, this comes out, happens to come out on May 11th, this episode we're doing today. That's my birthday. So if you'd like to give me a nice birthday wish, how about you go over there to AndersonCowan.com and secure yourself a ticket for one of the grouper screenings. I'm this close, Brian. I'm holding up a very, less than an inch,
very small,
to securing a venue in Phoenix. Also very close to getting my venue secured in Boston, and then I will have all of my cities secured.
Now we're talking.
Sorry, no New York still, but the most important one, the one that I'm pushing hardest right now is 3 weeks away, is the big premiere.
Big premiere.
In Los Angeles. TCL Chinese Theaters. The beautiful TCL Chinese Theaters. Thanks to our friend Tom, and that's going to be like the real deal. I'm going to have the step and repeat, which I got that. Looks pretty nice.
I like that.
Everyone can walk down the red carpet, even though it won't be red carpet. It's going to be something different because I don't like to go with the red carpet. But
it'll be red carpet-esque.
It's going to be something to walk on. Have your picture taken in front of the big step and repeat, as they call it there. And all of my friends and buddies and people you might have heard about on other shows are going to be there. Like Corey fucking Triple Sap. He's going to be there.
Triple Sap.
Alex Popich, the guy with the infamous fish story. Mm. Horrible, horrible fish tank story that he told me after disaster years ago. Terrible. Right. Poop. Terrible. Anyways, a lot of my friends from my past are going to be there. It's going to be a big party, as well as the entire cast and crew. And we'll be doing a Q&A at the end of the movie. And once this movie's done, Brian, I think I might just drop.
Yep.
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's a marathon, but right now it's kind of a sprint. And
sprint to the finish line?
You know, right now it's credits, and you don't know, but credits take good 40 hours to put together.
Really?
So I'm dealing with 40 hours worth. And I know I'm going to fuck up and leave somebody off or misspell somebody's name, but I'm trying my best. And I feel like as soon as this thing's done, I'm just going to fucking drop. I don't know if I'll have the energy to actually make the premiere.
Appearing as Anderson Cowan. Mike Carano.
But yeah, I think Mike Carano might be doing moderating the Q&A for us.
So, good. Yeah. It's definitely stay on topic.
Tyler C. White will be there as well. It's going to be a big party. So if you'd like to secure tickets, please go over to AndersonCowan.com. Do so on my birthday if you like. Like I've been saying all along, I believe this thing will sell out. If not sell out, it'll be really close, and tickets are more than half gone right now. But I could use some of the funds now to pay some of the people that are finishing off my film. It's always something, Brian. All right. So I've been guaranteed the movie will come in. I'm flying into Chicago in a week and a half here, right, to do the final sound mix. Right. I was on my phone with Corey, my sound guy today. Things are looking pretty swell. However, the guy that's doing my color correction and, you know, he's the final assembly and output of the movie, things were going swimmingly. It was supposed to be done two weeks ago. As I sit here, nothing's happened since then.
Oh no.
Jury duty for my buddy. Jury duty for my colorist.
Judiciary now.
He's stuck on some ridiculous, awful case. He's sequestered and I can't even talk to him.
Wow.
Horrific. He'll be done. He says a week from today, he will be done. So we'll have enough time to get it finished to my liking.
Still.
But I mean, what are the chances of that? You know what I mean?
Right, smack
what
in
are
the middle.
Fucking
smack
chances
in the middle. Post.
Of that? So anyways, enough about that. Don't you look forward to a day where I'm not talking about groupers?
It feels like it'll never get here.
You know, I also just want to reiterate, this is not me just, you know, trying to live out some little fantasy. Like,
well, that's what it is.
This is me trying to put my best foot forward and do what I want to do with my life, which is make movies. This is a stepping stone. It's not the end all be all bucket list. Here, I get to walk a red carpet and have a premiere and everyone look at me. I'm actually dreading.
You plan the red carpet before you wrote the script.
Yeah,
right?
That's what you do. If you're Brian Bishop, that's what you do. You actually...
The working title is Avenue to the Red Carpet.
You secure the red carpet and the stanchions long before you even write in the beginning, right? No, but it's not a bucket list thing. I want to make others. This is the step to make that happen. And I really, really appreciate everyone who has supported to this point to help this guy, speaking of me, maybe possibly live out his dream and get to make, you know, movies here and there, which is my fucking dream. And I can't believe that I'm still going after it, but here I am. So come out and be a part of the beginning of this, hopefully. And, or maybe the end, either way, it's something. It's either the beginning or the end, and come be a part of it. But I really appreciate everyone who's put me in this position and everyone who's gotten tickets thus far. So
you're on the precipice.
Look forward. Look forward to that day. And what I was starting to say is I'm dreading it. Very large part of me, a majority of me is dreading this. And I've said it before, but there's nothing quite like the agony that is sitting in a theater, watching your film on the screen and being responsible for, embarrassed and ashamed, you know, having like friends watch a movie that I recommend to them, especially if I'm there.
The ultimate recommendation is I wrote and directed this.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm cringing a lot of time if I, you know, take a friend to see a movie that I loved and I'm like, you're going to love it. We're going to go see it. And then like, as the movie's going on, I'm going, oh God, I don't know if they like it. Like all the insecurities come out. It is horrific, but it's part of the process.
This would be like your first test screening plus screening in one.
Well, there's no testing because I'm not going back and
fixing it.
That's what I mean.
This would be like everything in one.
So speaking of movies, what have you seen, Brad?
Seen any movies lately?
I've seen a couple.
I saw a film you and I discussed in about 2.5 seconds yesterday. You told me to see it. I said, you got to see Tully.
Oh, please tell me you've seen Tully.
You
seen Tully?
I saw Tully.
All right, cool. Because I'd be able to talk about Tully. Ivan Reitman's son's new movie.
He has a name.
Is that his dad, right?
It is. His name is Jason Reitman.
I would be able to talk about that at length without you having seen it and without doing the Patreon spoiler edition of it. However, I think this movie definitely needs a Patreon edition spoiler.
Maybe not too long, but we need the certain parts need to be addressed.
We're not going
to
do a half hour of Infinity War on it, but a good 15 minutes maybe.
Good part needs
all right,
to be addressed.
Cool. So let's just talk about...
The good news is you can talk about 88% of this movie.
Let's do it. Go ahead. Give
Tully is written is in theaters now. It's directed by Ivan Reitman's son, Jason Reitman, and written by Diablo Cody, the fourth collaboration.
Third, I thought.
Jennifer's Body was apparently one of theirs.
No, he didn't do that.
That's what I read on Wikipedia.
You're lying. You're reading bullshit.
Oh, well, if I read it wrong, then forgive me.
All right, I'm going to IMDb this shit.
Maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he produced that.
Jennifer's Body.
That's why I said fourth collaboration.
All right. Okay, all right, you're safe there. Go ahead.
Of course, Juno and Young Adult. Young Adult, by the way, I looked up after I called it a disaster, 81% of Rotten Tomatoes, so people did like it, although I think it may have had some Juno and up in the air momentum going for it, and people were kind of tricked because that's not a good movie.
The one that I was thinking of was Women and Children or something like that. It was one that was, he did a drama that was terrible.
Men, Women and Children? Was that what it was
something
called?
Like that, yeah. No one in the right mind liked it. I guess Labor Day is another one of his that people did.
Kind of came and went.
Didn't like. It's not like, this is not the kind of guy, critics seem to give this guy a pass. I'm not sure why. And he's not the kind of guy that, like, you know, people get passionate about, I don't think. However, his name is out there quite a bit.
Yeah.
But like, do you know anyone? Oh man, new Jason Reitman, the new film. Gotta go see it.
In fact, I like Juno. I'll even say I liked it a lot. In retrospect, it got a little precious for its own good.
And absolutely.
Thank You for Smoking. I like quite a bit. Nope. And I really loved Up in the Air. So he's made a handful of movies that I enjoy, but a handful of movies that I've very little.
He's a capable filmmaker. He stays in his lane, and there's really not Diablo Cody. She's more of a poppy. I think her writing stands out more than his directing for sure. Whether you like it or not.
Yeah. For better, or for worse.
So Tully.
Tully is starring Charlize Theron, Ron Livingston, Mackenzie Davis as Tully, and Mark Duplass. Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you consider this for good movies with bad endings?
No.
No, you like the ending? Good.
No. Neither nor.
No.
Yeah. Bad movie.
Not a good movie.
No, not a good movie. All right, let's just start on a positive note. Charlize Theron is fucking amazing in this movie.
Yeah.
She's Theron. Charlize Theron. I know how to. It's Theron. Charlize Theron. I don't know how much did you do research, how much she gained for this role.
I should have done research. Was she really pregnant at one point? Because she looks like she had the post-pregnancy.
She's heavy, and you know, you hear a lot of bravery. She's so brave in this town. You heard a lot about her being brave for doing a movie where she ugged it up with Monster a number of years ago. Here she is putting her body on display, and it's being in the middle of Hollywood and being who she is. Yep. It was, you know, about as brave as you can get as an actress doing a role or as an actor.
Definitely a Oscar baity in terms of not Oscar bait, but a very Oscar friendly.
I liked her role. I liked her character. I liked her. The movie's called Tully. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about Tully, but Tully is not the type of person I would A, leave my child with, B, want to spend any time with at all, unless I was hammered and she was hot and we might hook up, but then it would have to awkwardly end soon after that. And see, I don't want to watch her on screen. She was insufferable. Is this just me?
She wasn't super compelling. I don't know about insufferable. She wasn't super compelling. I would not hire her as a night nurse.
No. No,
night nannies with her. So let's set the table.
You've got experience with this too. You've had a night nanny or two, right?
So I will set the table for this and say
set
that Tully is about a woman, not Tully, played by Charlize Theron, who has two kids and one more on the way. She's 9 months pregnant with child number three.
Unexpected number three.
And she is, she and her husband, Ron Livingston, they're doing okay, but not great. You know, they're getting by.
They have the stereotypical American.
They're solidly middle class.
Yeah.
Solidly middle class.
They talk, but they don't talk a whole lot.
Yeah. He's the kind of, so the one thing I didn't like about the movie specifically was that it reminded me so much of Juno, where Jason Bateman had to, for dramatic sake, had to be, you know, the asshole. Ron Livingston was almost servicing the plot, being the sort of out of it husband.
Yeah, he wasn't. I think it's probably how a lot of women feel when they watch movies. Like maybe this little comeuppance for the guys. Maybe. However, that being said, my main problem with this movie is women deserve so much better than this fucking movie. They deserve a movie of their own that's like this, but it's got to have a higher ceiling than this.
Interesting. I didn't think about that. But sorry, keep sitting at the table. So yeah, baby number three comes, and she was already, she being Charlize Theron, was already driven to the brink, and now she just can't handle it.
And
she's about to have a nervous breakdown, and her very wealthy brother, Mark Duplass, who has done very well for himself. He's a bit of a, you know, D-bag, but he's made some money. He says, here's my gift to you. I'm going to hire you a night nurse, night nanny, they call it. And she will be there. And she's like, I don't want someone else raising my child. And he's like, she'll be there at night. You don't even know. She's going to come and go like a church mouse. Mm-hmm. She will take care of everything. And you can just get some sleep. And she's like, I don't know. And then one night, middle of the night, Tully shows up.
Yeah.
Tully, the night nurse.
Yes.
Played by Mackenzie Davis.
The namesake of the film.
That's right. And she becomes the save-all. You know what I mean? For Charlize Theron's family and her
there
sanity.
Could have been a movie without Tully that I probably would have liked a whole lot more than this. Now, here are the problems that I have with Tully. She shows up. She's like the yoga type chick that you might see at your gym, and she's talking about molecules, and she comes in hot with all this information, and you could tell that
pseudoscientific.
Theron's character is not really that sure about her, but still goes upstairs. Another huge issue I had was the great montage. I really enjoyed the montage of the child rearing and and the changing the diapers in the middle of the night, waking up. I mean, I think you and I can definitely relate to that.
I will say a lot of the movie rang true.
I've been on full time night duty with Atticus since my wife went back to work over a year ago. Mm-hmm. So like, I get it. I'm the guy who wakes up every single night when Atticus has an issue. Change the diapers. The diaper genie was a part of the really good montage. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. However, part of the montage was her pumping milk, which never came up really because. So Tully Night Nanny comes in and says, yeah, you know, you just go to sleep, pretend like everything's fine. And when it's time to feed, I'll come up and wake you. No, go get the fucking milk. Yeah,
the milk I'm pumping.
Pumping. What's the point of that? Right. Problem number two, Ron Livingston, the husband, we're to believe that he went on with this woman in his house for weeks, perhaps a few months without ever going downstairs to meet her. What kind of a world is this set up in? Right. Also, Ron Livingston never once says, hey, he's not an abusive husband. He's a beta. He's not an alpha. He's not a dick. He's not abusive. Never once does it occur to him to say, hey, you know what? I can wake up with a baby, especially because you're pumping. You're pumping the milk. So yeah, it doesn't they lean on that. Well, I don't have boobs. Yeah, but you got the fucking milk.
Yeah.
I've lived this.
Yeah, he struck me as servicing the plot more with his out of itness. Like, I don't think you get that far into it. Maybe you do, but I don't think most people get that far into adulthood by being that out of it.
No. And you just, any woman with any self-respect would just say, hey, honey, you think you can help out tonight? Yeah. Like, that never comes up. And that's one of my problems with this movie for women. I feel like they should have either a better role model, or I'm hoping that a bunch of women are saying, why the fuck is she not asking this guy to help?
At the very least, stand up for yourself and say, hey man, I'm really tired. This is hard. I know you work.
It didn't ring true. It almost felt like man bashing to me.
To your earlier point, yes, one of the truths I saw in this movie that I recognized was, so we being Christy and myself, Christy and I, were very initially, Teresa Strauss, remember Teresa, former guest of the show? Insisted we get a night nurse. It'll change your life. And we're like, we had the exact same take of Charlize Theron, which is, I don't know, if, you know, when the baby wakes up crying, I don't want someone else to go in there. You know,
her exact words, right? I don't want somebody else bonding with my baby.
That was kind of it. We said almost those exact same words. And Teresa's like, don't be an idiot, blah, 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 you got to do it. And so we reached out to a couple and we had hired one to come in maybe, I think, once or twice a week just to spell us a little bit early on, like maybe 4 or 5 days after Tessa came home from the hospital. Mm. And when she did, it was like Tully, but I can't explain to you just how, once you're that sleep deprived for whatever, 5 days, you know, the baby's up all night and all of a sudden your hands are freed and someone else takes over and we come into the room and everything's set up like it's supposed to be. Everything's working like it's supposed to be. All the little baby stuff, we didn't know how, when you're new to the baby stuff, you know how it works. You know how this thing works, where that thing goes. She set it up and then the nursery came to life. And it's at that point that I realized, like, oh, she's here for us as much as she's here for the baby. Uh-huh. And we ended up having a really good relationship with our night.
Until you fired her. Can I tell you
something? She left us.
Can I tell you something?
She left us. We would have kept her forever.
Brian, real quick. If it wasn't for your illness, you know, stuff that you might go through, I'd be giving you shit about the night nurse.
Really?
I let it slide because you know what?
I've been through a lot.
You've been through a lot. Yeah. Kick your feet up. Let somebody else take care of you.
Initially, it was supposed to be 1 or 2 days a week, but it actually became like 3 and 4.
Yeah, if you didn't have that,
buddy,
I would be giving you a lot of shit.
Well, it's a good thing. I almost died then.
Especially when I heard how much it cost.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's like a minimum 8-hour shift.
Ridiculous.
So you're being a full-time assistant.
First half hour.
And you never see her.
First like 20, 30 minutes of this movie, I actually kind of enjoyed. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, television made for TV. It felt like casual.
It's halfway between Juno and young adult in terms of tone.
There's not a whole lot cinematic going on. He doesn't do too many cinematic things with the camera.
Feels down and dirty.
Yeah. But I like the characters. I really like, you know, seeing what she was going through. And I appreciated
the stuff with her two older kids is good too.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about her two older kids. She's got like a nerdy daughter who's like, oh, what, 5 or 6? And then she's got this, they didn't go the stereotypical.
She's like 6, 7, but yeah,
stereotypical Asperger's or autistic. They just kind of went with some unknown.
They kept saying it was quirky.
Quirky, yeah. And like he needed to be brushed at night. And like many of the attributes that somebody with autism has, which is like he freaks out if she doesn't go in the right parking lot.
Noises alarm and stuff like that.
Yeah, somebody flushed a toilet and he fucking loses it. Really cute kid, too. I like to see that kid in something else where he's not acting like a quirky kid. But Tully shows up about, I'd say, 25, 30 minutes into the movie.
I think she marks the beginning of Act Two.
Here's an example. Like, there's a scene where they go to, what's Marion? What's her name? Charlize Theron's name in the movie?
I've honestly forgotten already.
Charlize Theron's character, they decide to go out to her old stomping grounds and just see her, because she kind of becomes friends with Tully, the night nurse. And as they're driving through the streets of the old neighborhood in New York where Charlize Theron's character used to live, Tully's saying, "Oh, your molecules are everywhere." And it's just like, stop it.
Yeah.
Fucking stop. And they even
that's
mentioned
who that character was, but I agree.
Theron's character even mentions that, you know, that gets less and less as you get older, people like that less and less. Young or old, like, it didn't work for me. She was like chalkboard nails. Mm. Nails on that chalkboard for me. Every time she come on screen, I'm going, what is she going to say right now that's going to upset me? Yeah. And there's a lot of clunkers.
It's like Run Up Juno.
A lot, yeah, kind of. Yeah. A lot of clunker jokes, too, which I don't think about this very often in movies, but I found myself thinking a couple times, like, why'd they keep that scene?
There were a couple times, it's funny you mentioned that, I didn't think about it until just now, but there were a few moments where I was like, that was very sitcom-y.
Was that supposed to be a joke?
That was a one-liner. That was a back and forth.
But it needs the edit to help, and like it didn't have the sitcom-y edit or the laugh track. Like, prime example, this isn't giving anything away, there's a scene where she's in the bathtub, Charlize Theron's character, and her 6 or 7 year old daughter, 7 or 8 if you ask Brian, is giving her, massaging her head and shampooing her hair.
Right.
And they're talking about a character that her daughter is reading about, something with to do with makeup. And it's supposed to be Draculata.
Draculaura.
Draculaura. Is it a real character? Do you know
what I don't know.
Draculaura. And she's like, "Mommy, you remind me of Draculaura." And who's Draculaura? It's Dracula's daughter.
Little sister or something. Yeah, daughter.
Daughter. Right. And she's like, "Oh, really? I do." And she's like, "Yeah, she's a princess, and she's this and that, and she's 1,000 years old. And then there's a beat, and Charlize Theron goes, "Sounds about right." And then it cuts, and it's like, either just don't have that in there.
Right.
It was just so clunky.
Yeah.
Just a clunky joke.
Didn't land.
Not at all.
Yeah, there.
I just maybe write it up a little bit.
I didn't find the movie very funny. No. I don't know if I was supposed to. Maybe it wasn't supposed to.
I don't think it was really supposed to be that funny, but when it tried, it at least land something. You know what I mean? But all that being said, I would have liked this movie if Tully never shows up, and it's just about, you know, it takes a different avenue.
Yeah.
Now, everything we've got to talk about the movie, which needs to be spoken of, we'll get to in the Patreon.
Sure. If you haven't seen it, you've heard pretty much everything you need to hear to see it. If you have seen it, there's a pretty big swing gap there that we need to discuss.
Yeah, and I get to line it up with another movie that everyone knows of, that this is the female version of, which I think is right there for the taking and needs to be discussed, and how, and it brings me back to, women deserve something better than this. And got some more questions about the children and what was going on. So, okay, I look forward. Now, by no means does this mean it's worthy of going running out to sea.
Mm.
However, you know, if you're thinking about having kids, ironically, the people that probably should see this, the
people that think about having kids,
the people that have kids that are going to relate to the character, they're not going to be able to see it.
No, it's true.
You know?
Yeah. The guy that comes on home video.
Yeah. So, all right. That's Tully.
What do you grade this movie? What are the stars? What?
1 to 10, like maybe a 5.5.
Mm. It's a 3-star movie for me. 3 out of 5.
And like all 5 of the 5.5 of those stars go to Charlize Theron's character. Yeah. I mean, and the way she played it. She was great.
I like the kids too.
I love the running scene.
That's the running scene.
Running scene was good.
I
like the kids. Livingston was just there. But I was excited to actually enjoy it until Tully showed up, and I just can't believe what a misstep that is. Now, I know that's personally, partially personal.
She didn't bother me nearly as much as that. I kind of wrote off a lot of her quirks, no pun intended, as just that's the character they went with, but it was like
cringeworthy. Just a know-it-all, hippy-dippy, and it kind of bothers me that she was talking about the cells regenerating, because I actually have that bit written and something I did. Okay. No, not groupers, but I don't know if I ever told you this, but I used to be so crazy with... I don't even want to talk about that. But I used to lean on that fact that all of our cells reproduce. We're not even the same bodies anymore after another. Like, I think it's 7 years.
I thought brain cells didn't reproduce. Is that not a thing?
The yours don't.
Oh, mine don't. Oh, yeah. Well, very sad.
Because the radiation.
I guess I just have enough. All right, what else did you see?
I saw Andre the Giant.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was assigned a film, Andre the Giant. It's not a real film because it's HBO, but it's not television. It's HBO.
That's true.
This is streaming on
somewhere between.
Brian Flickfest this a couple weeks ago, and he subjected me to it. So Brian, you know, he's keeping up his predictable ways of assigning me music documentaries and or pro wrestling documentaries.
Oh, so now it's one of the other?
Yeah, okay. Those are kind of your sweet spots. It baffles the mind that the pro wrestling is, especially in the 80s when it was really swinging. Buddy,
that was a sweet spot. Sweet spot.
So I don't know much about Andre the Giant other than, you know, he was... Did you watch WrestleMania 3?
Oh, yeah. Oh, buddy. You remember? Many times.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a WrestleMania 3 until I watched this documentary. I knew very, very little about it.
That was a glorious WrestleMania.
You have to understand, when WrestleMania came out in 87, I was already smoking, banging, drinking, watching Platoon in the theaters over and over again. I was like 15 years old. I'm not watching WrestleMania 3.
In retrospect, the argument you made to WWF 13. At the time jumped the shark with WrestleMania 3, because where do you go from that? Hulkster slammed onto the Giant. That's the biggest moment in wrestling history.
So, this documentary follows the life and times of Andre the Giant, and it was very well done, and
than life figure
opened up a whole window into a man's life that I knew of but was not.
What did you know about Andre the Giant? Probably just the Princess Bride.
I knew he was a wrestler, but I didn't really know, like, you know, his lore in the mm-hmm. the wrestling. And I did a chat with Andy last summer. I was a big wrestling fan. I'm drawing a blank on his name. My apologies. But he really gave me a new appreciation for wrestling.
Randy Savage.
He actually is an amateur wrestler himself. And nice. he was letting me know all the stuff from Vince McMahon stuff. Vince McMahon sheds a tear in this one.
I know.
And it's because of money, I think.
That's right. All the money left on the table. All the money we could have made.
He was special. He was real special. So, yeah, I knew, and I also know that, you know, his face is slathered all over the place because of Shepherd Fairy, right? Shepherd Fairy.
And they never got into that.
And I meant to research, but didn't bother to, that his original, Andre the Giant's original wrestling name when he was over in France and when he first came over here was the French Fairy. What are the chances now? Shepherd Fairy is the street artist out here. He's all over Exeter, the gift shop. Mm-hmm. You know him from that. Along with Banksy, and his main thing is Obey, and he has the pictures,
big facade of Andre the Giant.
Mug of Andre the Giant, and you know he goes by Shepherd Fairy, and Andre the Giant's original wrestling name
could
had Fairy
some,
right
could
in
be
it.
Something there.
So, if you recall in the documentary, they're trying to put his name down on the bill for like North Carolina or Raleigh or something.
Because back then they did a lot more touring.
Right, when it was all in different sections. Very interesting, too, how like the whole wrestling came to be, the Federation, which had been explained to me before, but this brought it back home again, too, how it became one big national, whereas before it was all tiny, small, little regional.
Vince McMahon, WWF, brought the whole thing national.
But they're like, so what do we put in the paper to promote this guy? And they're like, well, he's called the Big Fairy. And they're like, we can't call him the Big Fairy. They're like, what's his real name? And they said, Andre. They said, we'll just call him Andre the Giant. That's how he got his name. And, we hear a lot of secondhand stories about the man. And got to
legend.
Hear about his flatulence more than I would have liked. I didn't need to hear about that. However, you can't look at a man that size and not wonder what
must
be like.
Especially the beer consumption alone.
Right. There's some legendary stories, which I don't know how much he can believe that he, drank a couple cases of wine.
Corroborated by many sources.
Yeah. But by the end, I hate to admit it, I think it had to do with the music and perhaps the editing and maybe other people's reactions and whatnot, but,
so the filmmaking,
I never really felt like I got to know the man at all, which is a shortcoming in the documentary. I think maybe no one really did. I think they kind of leaned on his legend more than an actual personal life, but, hearing them talk about how the world is kind of, getting better and it's set up to help people that are, have shortcomings, like handicapped and blind, deaf, and cripples, even though that's not the appropriate word to use, but that's what he used. He says nothing for giants.
True.
And he had to fucking deal with it all the time. And I was feeling for the guy quite a bit by the end.
Driving around those little cars.
And then it all leads up and kind of culminates with this WrestleMania 3, which was the biggest wrestling
at the time, it was the biggest indoor event, sporting event of all time.
It was
time.
Outdoor, wasn't it?
No, it was inside the Pontiac Silverdome.
Oh, it was a Silverdome. Okay, 93,000 people, and he had become a heel at that point, and he wrestled with the Hulk, and you get
let
to
the
hear
Hulkster Slim.
Get to see the Hulk talk quite a bit. The Hulk was surprisingly gracious, as just about everyone was with this hulking giant who was no longer with us. who did so much for the right. sport. I mean, what are they going to do, you know? But while Hulk sat there wearing one of his own shirts, you know, crying, talking about how he was pretending to cry, trying to cry.
Shirts.
He was, remember?
That's right, he was.
And you, I can't look at that guy. I can't look at Michael Richards. There's certain people in this business where I can't look at them without just hearing the N-word loud and clear as I look at their faces. And he's one of them now.
Dog the bounty hunter.
Dog? Yes.
Me.
Brian. It's hard doing the show when the N-word is just loud in my...
tip my tongue at all times.
Loud in my head as I stare across from you. But yeah, you could do worse. I tried to get the wife to watch it. She had zero interest. She watched the first 10 minutes and...
really?
Tapped out. It does get more emotional and better as it goes on. But that third act, it's really starting to sing. Mm-hmm. I really like that third act where it really has direction. Before that, they're trying to paint a picture of a man that they didn't really... have that much intimacy with, you know. I would have liked to have heard from a girlfriend or, like, you know, a little bit more from.
Yeah, there was much more about his lore and his legend.
Yeah,
about him.
And like even his old brother and sister, they're just like, this is the chair that my mother had made for him because he was big. Oh, is he big, dude? Is this Andre big guy? I haven't heard that.
The giant who's big.
Yeah. Oh, and then you know what? It almost ruined the whole fucking movie.
What happened? Ric Flair?
No, Ric Flair's fine. Little Rob Reiner comes on. And starts,
oh, that's right. And Billy Crystal.
Waxing.
That's right.
Ugh. I like the Billy Crystal, but what do you got to do? Associate yourself with that Rob Reiner fuck?
Well, they're in the same.
What do you got to do?
They're in the same.
How about you walk out of the room when he's in the
room? I'll be back.
Fucking Rob Reiner's. Here's the thing. I couldn't understand a word he said in the audition, but he was perfect because he was big. And he was playing a giant. So I said yes.
It's good.
Stop it. That was kind of sad, too, the stories of behind the scenes of... of that Princess Bride, where he couldn't like catch.
Yeah, he could barely do any of the physical stuff.
Robin Wright, he couldn't catch her, and they had to put wires on people and him on the fucking for the horse's sake. They had to fly the wires so that he wouldn't crush
was
the poor horse.
500-pound man.
And I like seeing that Vince McMahon interview and try and speak, you know, beyond his personality.
Right.
That man is fascinating.
Indeed.
I can't wait for the documentary.
That's another guy
about
I'd
him.
Like to know the real Vince McMahon.
Because I don't know if he knows the real Vince McMahon.
Does anyone know?
Brian, stop it. But I feel like I know as much about Vince McMahon after watching this documentary as I do about Andre the Giant, which is very little. Yeah. I still don't know much about the man.
Very little, yeah.
Perhaps there wasn't much about him.
Maybe there's not much to him aside from a shrewd businessman. I'm talking about Vince McMahon now.
I'm talking about Andre the Giant. Okay. Not that shrewd. He didn't seem to come off as like foolish though with his
no didn't
money.
Seem to care.
No,
he lived a very meager life in North Carolina.
I really did like the persona that he had in the wrestling world as well as probably his real life, which was, you know, he didn't need to be champion. He didn't need to be number one. He knew who he was. He never did put on any capes or anything.
He transcended championships. He was Andre the Giant.
He was just that guy. Mm. Yeah, he's just like, here I am. Here's who I am. Like, just the best part of the whole documentary by far, which is worth a watch. Is the behind the scenes discussion from the Hulkster himself about how little was known of the outcome of WrestleMania 3, which to somebody who thinks wrestling is ridiculous because it's so fake and you know it's all like set up. I know that they're doing incredible things and stunts in there, but the fact that you know everyone, whoever's in the dressing room knows who's going to win and lose. The fact that it went as far as it did,
that's good.
That was really good.
I'll do the right thing.
That was really, really good. And and how Andre was just fucking with them the whole time. Yeah. Like that was kind of a peek into the guy's soul.
I like the backstage stories. Like when the guy came in, the
guy that worked for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out.
He didn't know. Okay, Andre had a guy working for him and the guy, he just started work for him. He's like, oh, cool. I'm working with Andre the Giant. I get full access now. He goes into the locker room and I guess there's this unspoken rule that only wrestlers are allowed in the locker room, which is a little weird, so he's like, hey, he goes in there with a video camera. This is like the fucking late 80s. He's got like a VHS. He's like, hey, Andre, how's it going? Unfortunately, he doesn't have footage of him saying, get out. But he tells the story pretty good.
Pretty good.
So what's going to happen at the end? Hulk asks. How's this going to go? I'll do the right thing.
He leaves it at that.
He's just sitting there drinking wine, playing cards. Like
drinking wine.
93,000 people.
Screaming around him.
Even Vince McMahon didn't know. No one knew.
It's good.
That showed the power and
you really got juice then.
Yeah, you know what? That let me know a lot about who he actually is, I guess. All right. Unless he was just so dumb he didn't care.
He didn't
like
know.
I still don't know if
what,
he was like,
what are we doing here?
I wouldn't be shocked if he had a 50 IQ or 150 IQ. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to I couldn't tell you if Andre was smart or not.
Nah. I mean, those stories about WrestleMania 3 and how he handled that, that tells you he's a genius.
Yeah. A savant, maybe.
Get out. Get out.
Speaking of documentaries, I saw a film.
RBG.
I saw RBG. Yeah. Speaking of women expecting better.
Red, blue,
women,
green.
You said women should expect better?
Yeah.
I got better for them.
RBG.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's a documentary in theaters now. It's only about 30 theaters nationwide, but I have to imagine it's going to expand.
You think so?
It's really good.
I hope so, because it's rare that my wife wants to see a film in theaters, and she's down to see.
She'll love this movie. I usually
she loves Ruth. So
usually when I tell Christy,
she's down with RBG.
She's down with the RBG.
The notorious RBG. When I tell Christy she has to see a movie,
she rolls her eyes and walks in the other room. That's what my wife does.
Two things happen for her to see it. One, I'll take her to go see it, in which case I'm seeing it for a second time.
And then you feel that. Do you feel that pressure that I was talking about earlier?
Absolutely.
Horrible, right?
Yeah. Or she'll see it on an airplane because she takes a lot of international flights and they play newer movies. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the extent to which Christy will listen to me. I ordered her. I said, I order you to see this movie.
Wow.
You will love it. And it's up your alley, and she has not seen it yet. Directed by Julie Cohen and Betsy West. This is your first Oscar nominee for best documentary this year. Sometimes movies that documentaries that do well in theaters, even just get like any kind of wide theatrical release, get kind of punished by the documentary voters, and that they won't put them up for best documentary. It happens years and years, years over. It happens all the time. Last year with Jane, the Jane Goodall documentary. So I can see that, but I think they get past it on this one because politically it lines up with, I imagine, a lot of their points of view. It is, of course, a biography of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice, if you don't recognize the name. It is 93% of Rotten Tomatoes. Hard to imagine a valid criticism of this movie. I could see someone, yes, like, you know, they don't like Ruth Bader Ginsburg personally or politically. And thus
does Hannity get to give a vote?
I'll bet there are some, just like there's probably some left-wing reviewers, but there's some right-wing reviewers out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they gave this a negative review, because it does celebrate her legacy, and if you think that she's bad for this country or she's a bad justice, then you
she wears
probably,
blue panties. You can't give her the thumbs up.
It's horrifying.
If she wore red panties, it'd be...
I see.
What I'm saying?
That's good.
Blue and red.
This came up on our Sunday's preview. It's an inspiring movie, Anderson, a sweet movie, not just female empowerment, but human empowerment. She is a very quiet, I would almost describe her as meek. I mean, it has a lot of stuff for her from college. She went to Harvard. She got her law degree. She went into law, and she actually argued, I think, was six cases before the Supreme Court as a lawyer, which is unusual. You don't usually argue that many cases. Maybe you do one or two if you're, you know, in that, if you're lucky enough. And she won five of six cases that she argued against.
What happened with
the
one she lost?
I don't know. They never got into it.
Is this a talking head documentary?
Meaning?
Is it a bunch of talking heads talking about her?
It's a 50-50. There's a lot of
love with his access.
No, man, not especially.
Is it a puff piece because she's still around?
It's very respectful and to a certain
any kind
extent,
of criticism of her. Because there's always two sides of the coin.
Keep in mind that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is objectively, I don't know her politics that well, but okay. You know, remember I saw the documentary, you never saw it, but I talked about it more than once, about Mitt Romney, and he came off, you know, I don't always agree or see eye to eye with
Mitt
Romney's policies,
Mitt.
But he came off as a genuinely decent human being. I'm like, this is a good person. I admit he may have some beliefs that you don't line up with, but you can see how this is a decent man. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is similar to that, in that you might not see eye to eye with her on a lot of her views. You might be more of a strict constitutionalist.
How old is
but
she?
She's in her 80s now, mid to late 80s. But she comes across as a genuinely decent human being and seems like one of our better people on this earth. Yeah. Whether or not you agree with her politically, she's a good person and an activist too, but the rarest kind of activist where she's not marching in a picket line or like, screaming for women's rights. She's got the goods, man. She's one of the best legal minds in the history of this country. She's on the Supreme Court, for God's sake. And she's, like, she affects change from the inside. Very inspiring.
Well, I mean,
very
she's
inspiring.
On the decision-making
she
panel.
She literally is as far inside as it gets.
Yeah.
No, but from her beginning.
Kind of weird if she's on the street with, like, a picket fence
but
going.
They compared her because she knew Gloria Steinem back in the day, and Gloria Steinem was more of an activist, but, like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg would, like, you know, work the system from the inside. She was the lawyer, and she was, working with the ACLU. Anyway, I'm selling this movie pretty high. It's very good. Got very dusty towards the end. Certain parts talking about her husband and, you know, their love of 50 something years.
How many female lawyers and people in the public eye are in this being asked about her? Like, what's her name? Red. Help me out here, buddy. What's her name?
Who's Red?
Red. Her name's Red.
All Red. She's not in this.
All Red. No, she's not. Now, okay, good.
She's also a very... No. I don't want to oversell this as a very leaning one way or the other documentary politically. It certainly has a point of view much more, in favor of, cause she being Ruth Bader Ginsburg was instrumental in the women's liberation movement mm-hmm. in the '70s.
Right.
So of course there's a lot about that. And of course now she finds herself at odds with things politically now, cause uh-huh. she's just leans a different way.
Right.
So it's kind of how she snakes her way through. And I mean, say that in a bad way,
right.
but sort of feels her way through this political minefield from the 1970s to today.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. This is really good. One of the best parts, and it was such a small part, but she loves opera. She loves reading. She loves the law. She doesn't,
very white.
She doesn't trivialize yes. herself with, you know, these mundane things.
Right.
She's never seen Saturday Night Live. She's never seen Kate McKinnon's.
That's like the guy that says, you know what? I've never had a sip of whiskey or a cigarette. It's like, I don't trust this person.
Well, you don't trust them to party with, but you can trust them with the law. You can trust them to interpret the constitution.
I don't
That's
know.
The kind of person you want.
Don't you think so? Sense of humor has something to do with being a rational, decent human being? Don't you think that kind
of... Well, funny you should mention that, because one of the best parts of the movie was footage of her. They taped her while watching the Kate McKinnon impression for the first time, and it's amazing. It's like a little child giggling. She couldn't stop herself.
Is it because she doesn't allow herself such luxuries, or because she just sees it as beneath her? Now I'm on the fence with this woman. Everything I had heard about her, I liked, but now hearing this,
it doesn't seem like a conscience. Oh. It didn't come across like a conscious. Like that's not for me. It was more like my interests are elsewhere. I'd rather go to the opera than to watch TV.
A little stuck in her ways.
Apparently she had a really great friendship with Samuel Alito, who was maybe one of, if not the most conservative member of the Supreme Court while he was there.
And
they were like really good friends, and it gets into how they were just this odd couple that just mm-hmm. palled around together. And they would say, he'd be like, she's
hilarious.
They both
liked opera.
Yeah, they did. But they did both like the opera.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know why that's shocking. It makes sense.
Well, these are learned people.
Any funny operas? Have they ever done that? Comedic opera? I don't know. I've seen one opera, and it was The Fly.
There must be.
It was Cronenberg did an opera, and it was of The Fly, and I bought a ticket. It was too expensive, and the wife and I went years ago.
Towards the end of this movie, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is shown living a lifelong dream by being in an opera, and it is a comedic opera. She's sort of a cameo, and she delivers some very funny lines.
Okay.
Anyway, I recommend RBG.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I think it's excellent.
I will see it.
And I can't imagine your political leanings one way or the other affecting what is just an impressive person. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is an impressive person, regardless of how you think politically.
Yeah, don't worry about me. I don't know if you're speaking directly to me or
the listener. No, the listener.
There's no way I would ever have any issue with a character in a documentary or anything just because of their political stance. Unless, you know, they're just like alt anything. Any kind of radical anything I don't really buy into.
Yeah, it's funny. I could see how Ruth Bader Ginsburg would have been considered radical to an extent
time,
in the '70s, but now it's just,
but now it's normal.
Cause she would argue for things like, they pointed out that there were laws back in the '70s where it was like women can be fired for being pregnant. If they were pregnant at work, they could be fired with no penalties. And nowadays that's like, oh, that's ridiculous. But back then the notion that she would fight against that is like, why are you trying to change the way things are?
Right. So she was it seemed radical at the time, but now it's been normalized for the better.
Completely.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? Radical.
I know what you're saying. People that hold
like skateboarding and doing cool flips.
Crazy shit.
Yeah. All right.
Coming up next. Any more questions about that?
Any famous people in it other than like the political heads?
Yeah, Bill Clinton's in it.
Who?
Well, Bill Clinton. Is he a political head, do you think?
You said Brooklyn.
Oh, Bill Clinton.
Yes.
There's archival footage of her being interviewed by the news people. Yeah.
Cronkite.
Katie Couric. Gloria Steinem. It's right. mostly political.
Okay. All right. Okay. It still troubles me.
It's very good.
I guess SNL is just one example. Like, she's probably seen The Simpsons or something like that. She shouldn't get hung up on it.
By the way, she was aware of it because, like, when they turned it on and it was Weekend Update with whatever the guy's name, the modern guy.
Michael Che.
No, the white guy.
Josh Whedon.
she looked at it. She goes, oh, this is Saturday Night Live. Like, she knows what it is.
Okay. Yeah, maybe SNL. She probably saw an episode once, and she's like, nah, not for me. I can't blame her. Yeah. I can't blame her. You made it seem like she wasn't even aware of it.
I
bet she's probably seen Seinfeld.
Yeah. But this was the first time she'd seen The Impression by Kate McKinnon.
You know what I mean? Though, like you don't trust a person who says they never had a cigarette or a shot of booze.
Yeah. Well,
exactly.
YOLO, man.
My point. And I don't trust you at all. You know what I'm saying?
Coming up next, we'll count down the overbearing mothers to five of them next.
Overbearing! Gaze, you were gone. You
probably floated away on the same breezy road. It's getting warm in. Well, in certain parts of the country it is. It's almost summertime. And somebody decided to jump in and get a Honeywell Contempo Series portable air conditioner. Dehumidifier and fan with dual filtration system. Smart. Get out of the rush. Don't get it when it's like, you know, super hot and everyone's ordering them all at once. It's gonna back up the orders. Delivery not available for 3 weeks. You're like, mm-hmm. I mean, summertime by then. Mm-hmm. Get it now. Other things purchased on the Amazon banner on AndersonandBryan.com include an iRobot Roomba 690. The Intel Core Intel Core desktop processor, Oculus Go standalone virtual reality headset, a Fitbit Versa smartwatch. And speaking of watches, someone also got a Casio Men's ProTech quartz watch. Netgear Nighthawk dual band smart Wi-Fi router was picked up, as well as a Thule package two bike trunk mount carrier. Hey, you're going biking, you gotta take those bikes with you. Brother printer drum unit was purchased, as well as an EVGA supernova power supply.
It's pronounced EVGA.
Oh, EVGA. Okay. EVGA liquid water CPU cooler. Got to keep that cooler, that computer powered and cooled. So good job by you. Sound Asleep Dream Series air mattress purchased, as well as a Hyper Ice back ice compression device that you wear around your back and keep it nice and iced. Scepter 32-inch LED TV, 720p. Weeha slotted screwdriver with precision handle. Plantronics Backbeat Fit wireless Bluetooth headphones. Chrome L-corner shower rod. A Quan's ultraviolet light for curing glue. A Mirax high back executive swivel chair. A Wall, I have this, Wall Professional 5-star series finishing tool. That's a head raiser.
You are a finishing
tool. I am a finishing tool. As well as a Wianus professional backpacking tent. How about the movies, Andrew?
Now you're a finishing tool.
Now I'm a finishing tool.
He's just finished.
I was finished.
Here are the movies that were clicked through. This is the last time I saw you. Capturing the Freedman's Fuck to the Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a movie that does not get brought up on the
disturbing
enough. And it is good. Capturing the Freedman's. Star Wars, the original trilogy, Episode 4, A New Hope, Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. Episode 6, Revenge of the Sith. Just kidding. Hey. Return of the Jedi. Hey, yes. Watchmen was clicked through, as well as Peter Rabbit. Those fucking billboards are still littering the streets, and I'm done with the rabbit puns. All right?
You're done with the puns?
The rabbit puns.
All right.
With that Peter Rabbit. Dog Day Afternoon was clicked through, as well as Frankenstein, 1931 version with that hilarious little girl scene.
Easy, buddy.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch, Smart Move, as well as Wild Tales, Briggsby Bear. Wild Tales.
Someone listened to us and went through Wild Tales and Hedwig.
Briggsby Bear as well. Special Unit. Obviously, no one was listening to us there. And Black Panther.
Where's our Black Panther?
When do we get
our Black Panther?
Wife still gets angry. I just bring it up and... She goes, what is that about you that you like to upset me so much? I'm like, I'm a provocateur. She's like, no, you're annoying.
I'm a raconteur.
I'm a provocateur. I'm a highly sought after house guest.
Thanks for the click throughs.
That was a little reference to Bean Flynn, which I hope to see click through next week, because Bean Flynn with Robert De Niro and Paul Dano is a fantastic little forgotten movie that took its lumps on Rotten Tomatoes for unknown reasons.
Unknown.
Very good movie.
Unknown.
But that Bean Flynn, right? That's what it's called. Bean Flynn. Yes. And Robert De Niro's character is phenomenal. Very quotable.
Right. All right. Thanks, you guys, for the click throughs. And back to the show. Hi, I'm Alan Alda, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Yeah, all right, we're back. Time now for top five overbearing mothers.
Domineer.
Domineering, right. Overbearing, controlling.
Domineer, a verb, mm-hmm. Assert one's will over another in an arrogant way.
Well done.
That's the definition according to Webster over there.
I like that. I can all agree with that.
Will you accept that?
Do you like when people listen?
No, I agree with don't you. Like that at all.
I'll stipulate.
So let's get right to it.
Let's go right to it.
Yeah.
Oh man. Like I said, 5 for 5 in best supporting actress nominations. Quite a juicy, the archetype, the trope, quite a juicy one to dig your teeth into. It turns out juicy. Mm-hmm. And initially I was like, well, how far is this going to go? Lots of crossover.
Hey, before I get into tweets, real quick, I'm going to interrupt you. Yeah, as though I had an infusion today, which I have not, but I did not. You had your infusion yesterday. Thank God we're recording a week late, a day late.
That's actually smart.
Luckily.
Because I'm pretty hyped up on the infusion days, but I'm pretty wiped out the next day.
We should do this more often. But I want to interrupt you with, I understand that I went off about Tully and her character, and she's the type of person that would go, I think I did that maybe on the Patreon episode. And I know that I go, a lot. So before I get all your fucking tweets, I realize it's a different kind. Okay. It's not heartfelt and like,
right, it's not earnest.
It's not like, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, earnest, exactly.
Yours is dismissive.
Very dismissive, yes. Very different. Like, Tully would give me a, if she heard me do that, because it's being dismissive and it would hurt her. All right, go ahead.
Can I start my list? How much crossover?
Probably 2. And if you don't have my number one on your list, it's because you forgot.
Wow. Okay.
Oh wait, you don't have my number one on your list.
Why? Because I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, you've seen it. You forgot.
You already think I'd have forgot.
Oh, I know you.
You know I forgot.
I'm excited now.
Okay, let's start with number 5. Do you bring clips?
I have one clip for number 3.
Between us, we have 5.
It's too many, Brian.
Too many.
Can't handle
Logan the clips. Okay, excellent. Number 5 for me. Nominated for Best Supporting Actress in 2000. A late addition to the list, but worthy. Frances McDormand as Elaine Miller in Almost Famous. Mm-hmm. Almost Famous. Did she make your list?
She did not. I knew it would be on your list because of your admiration for this film.
I do like this film quite a bit. I own this film.
And actually, it is good. It's a solid pick. It's a worthy pick.
Yes. Written and directed by Cameron Crowe. Of course, Patrick Fugit as William Miller, his mother, Elaine. He starts the story under the thumb of his domineering mother. And remember early on in the movie, she had him convinced that he was a teenager when he was in fact 11 years old.
Right.
That's a bit, you can see that's controlling. Mm-hmm. You can see that as controlling.
It's a bit manipulative.
It's a bit manipulative. It's a bit dishonest.
Life fact manipulation.
Old. She decided to skip him ahead of grade and lie to him about how old he was. And mm-hmm. Turns out he's not really 13, he's 11. But here's the final straw. Now, remember that she, Elaine Miller, played Frances McDormand, had a contentious relationship with her daughter.
Time's up!
Played by Zoe Deschanel. And they have a contentious relationship, as a lot of mothers and daughters do in their teenage years. And here's the Zoe laying out. So she comes into the house. She sneaks in early in the morning. Where have you been? I was out with my boyfriend. She's like, what do you got in your pocket? And she pulls out the Simon Garfunkel album. She's like, they are on dope. And she points at their eyes comedically. And it's the final straw. Here Zoe Deschanel lays out all the ways that her mother, Elaine, is controlling and manipulative.
First, it was butter. Then it was sugar and white flour, bacon, eggs, bologna, rock and roll, motorcycles. Then it was celebrating Christmas on a day in September when you knew it wouldn't be commercialized. What else are you gonna ban?
Honey, you want to rebel against knowledge. I'm trying to give you the cliff notes on how to live life in this world.
We're like nobody else I know.
I am a college professor. Why can't I teach my own kids? Use me.
Daryl says that you use knowledge to keep me down. He says I'm a yes person and you are trying to raise us in a no environment.
Well, clearly, no is a word Daryl doesn't hear much.
I can't live here! I hate you! Even William hates you!
I don't hate her.
You do hate her. You don't even know the truth.
Sweetheart, don't be a drama queen.
Feck you!
And she gives her the big F word.
It's pretty good.
It says fact, but you know what she means. Mm-hmm. And this is, so Frances McDormand, once little Patrick Fugit goes off into the world and becomes a cub reporter, a traveling reporter, that is, what's her face keeps popping up. Frances McDormand keeps popping up comedically. Remember at one point she talks some sense into Billy Crudup's character on a payphone. She's like, it tells her how to treat her son and all that stuff. So she's controlling even from afar, as they tour the country.
A very good friend of mine, his name's Max. Mm. He has a mother who's almost identical to this
really?
Woman. Yes. But I love her. She's great. I remember her.
You realize the overbearing mother still is overbearing for a reason. It's not like they're a distant mother or an uncaring mother. No, they love too much.
One of my only friends who's a male with an eating disorder, ironically. Mm-hmm. It's not ironic, actually. I guess it makes sense. You know, he's very barren, the domineering mother he's got. And I remember her explaining to me what a conservative really is. And it went on for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How was that? Was that conversation fun?
I didn't like it. Looking for an escape
route.
It
was enjoyable.
It was right by the front door. I remember it too.
That's the escape route.
She was like actually standing in front of the front door.
Oh, no, she was blocking.
Yeah. I love her though. She's a great lady. She was the principal of Hollywood High for a number
of years. How about
that? Yeah.
The one that has all the celebrities painted on it? Right down on Highland?
Does it have celebrities?
It does now. Like all the people who went there. Like all the, you know, people who wanted to be famous.
It's across the street, isn't it? Where John Ritter's like holding back the... That's not Hollywood. Is that part of Hollywood High?
Because
Hollywood High is definitely on the other side of the street as well.
It's Hollywood between Sunset and Hollywood.
Yeah, but I know the mural you're talking about is John Ritter like holding back like
Yes.
What do you call that? Curtain.
Curtain.
But that's on the opposite side of where Hollywood High is.
Really?
I believe so. Number five for me. Oh, I got to bring up my notes here. The Meddler. This is my softest of the five. This one's actually a sweet little movie. A recent movie, too. 2015. I actually quite enjoy this. This is not a movie that was made for me. It's called The Meddler, directed by Lorenz Gaffaria.
He's like a few years old, right?
2015. Yeah. Did you do the math?
I skipped that
pretty quick, man. I didn't see you.
I was still trying to place the title. I'm like, wait, this movie's recent.
The Meddler. I mean, it's right there in the title. She's a meddler. And
did you confess this?
I probably did. 2015. I saw it in the theaters. This is starring Susan Sarandon and Rose Byrne, as well as J.K. Simmons. Here's the storyline. Rose Byrne is, she's a grown woman, right? This is a few years ago. So imagine Rose Byrne 3 years ago, right? Maybe 4 years ago, because they probably shot it before 2015. And she's a grown woman. She's out on her own. She moves to Los Angeles to make it. I believe she's going to be an actress or something, right? Or a screenwriter, perhaps. My apologies. I can't remember exactly what her profession was. It had something to do with Hollywood. Susan Sarandon, she's got a little money from her late husband, and she's an independent woman, and she didn't like the idea of living with an empty nest. So what does she do? She fucking moves from New York and follows her daughter out there. Soon after, her daughter, Rose Byrne, moves out to Hollywood. To Los Angeles, and all of a sudden there's her mom, who's got an iPhone, and Susan Sarandon, she nails this character. It's great. And she's constantly texting her on this new device that she has, and she's so happy that she can correspond with her daughter still and living the same. She's constantly doing the pop-ins and just come, much to the chagrin, as you might imagine, of Rose Byrne. And then it becomes a little bit saccharine and sappy by the time it's all said and done. Bless you, Logan.
Easy, buddy.
And she finds Susan Sarandon's character, the Meddler, finds her own people and is able to. She's a lovable Meddler, though. You know, it's the kind of movie that makes you kind of think about your own mom and makes you want to call
Indeed.
Her. This is not a movie that I would love, that I was screaming from the rafters when I flick-fested, but it's a solid movie. And when I brought this topic up to the wife, which I do every now and again, because sometimes she's got some good ones, right? Especially with this kind of thing. She goes, what's that one you talked to me about it a little while ago?
But you remember the description?
She remembered me talking to her about it. Yeah. So what did I do? I went and got my trusty book. That's and right. We spent probably 15 minutes of me just reading titles backwards until we finally landed on The Meddler from 2015.
Nice.
The Meddler 2015. This kind of movie, if you're looking for just something to watch with your significant other, you got a quiet night. And
it's good to know, HBO because I think I dismissed this movie when it came out. It looks sick.
I think you'd enjoy The Meddler. Okay. And I think that
you're a buddy.
Now it's definitely one of those movies. Logan just fled the table. I guess he's not a fan of The Meddler. It's definitely
no spoilers.
One of these movies, and I'm the first to admit it, that if this movie took off and was a smash hit, I'd go see it. I'd be like, I wouldn't be anti. I'd be mystified as to why people are freaking out. I am not as mystified, but closely as mystified as to why people weren't as into this movie, because I would think that a lot of this is what I put instead of Lady Bird. I could have had Lady Bird in the number five spot easily.
It's a domineering mom.
It was just a little bit too recent.
This is streaming on Stars, by the way.
The Meddler's it's a fun little movie. I enjoyed it.
All right.
But yeah, I could have easily had Lady Bird here.
That's funny you mentioned lovable Meddler. And
ooh, Lady Bird. She was up for best supporting actress.
That's Metcalf.
She could have made your list.
Didn't even make my also-rans. Which is too bad because it was an oversight by me. That's a good meddling mom. It's funny you mentioned Lovell Meddlers and reminding me of my own mom. We used to tease my mom, call her the meddler, because out of love, she would get involved in family members' affairs, try and steer them the right way or give them advice. And a lot of time, like, mom, stop meddling. But of course, she did it out of love. So,
yeah. You can't really.
That's how it is. Meddling is one of those things where it's like you're not maliciously.
You're not You're not trying to work out your own shit, even though you
none
are
of our
an
five. None of our five are meddlers except for this one. But my five are all like, you know, they're not good people for the most part.
I got a comical one, and then I have three that are fairly evil. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna have some more crossover. Number four, a film that have you seen Throw Mama from the Train?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay,
it just didn't really do much for
Throw
me.
Throw Mama from
I
the Train.
I get that and Planes, Trains.
Oh,
they're kind of like the same movie to me.
Very different.
Very similar.
Very
similar in tone.
No, they're not.
Actors. There's a lot of crossover.
There's no crossover.
Yeah, there is.
Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito are in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's John Candy and Steve Martin in the other one.
They're the same actors. Yeah, okay. Interchangeable.
Well, in that case,
same mom,
in that
right?
sense, you're correct. There's no mom in the other one.
She's in it. She's in
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
I believe she's in there.
No. Anne Ramsey? Anne Ramsey.
Same
plays.
Movie in my same forgettable movie in my
I
head.
I have to sign you a throw off from the
No, train. You don't have to do
Or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Because they both have trains in the title, so understandable. Mrs. Lift, played by Anne Ramsey, is directed by Danny DeVito, Throw Mom from the Train. Nominated for Best Supporting Actress, lost to Anderson, Olympia Dukakis. Another great mom and Moonstruck.
I was going to say that, yes.
Her famous speech impediment, Anne Ramsey, you might know her from Goonies, or this movie, caused by...
Very attractive older woman.
How dare you? Surgery should... Not germane to this. She's a lovely woman. Good actress. Underwent surgeries to her throat cancer. She was actually going through more treatment during the shooting of the film, but never requested any time off. She died just after the Oscars in 1988, just a few months afterwards. Here's a clip. So the first time we meet Mrs. Lift, we get a pretty good idea right away of her complicated relationship with her son, Owen, played by Danny DeVito. He's kind of a man-child. He takes care of her. They live together. They have an interesting relationship, and here's Mrs. Lift requesting assistance from her son.
Some ice in it. Evan, hurry up, Mama. Chap, chap, Evan, come on.
All right.
Evan, you were writing a letter.
No, Mama.
You were writing to tell them to take me away. You want them to take me away.
I'm writing a story for class, Mama. I don't want them to take you away.
Yes, you do.
Owen loves his Mama.
Owen loves his Mama. Owen loves his mama.
She berates him and mocks him as he tells her he loves him. Mm-hmm. That's good. She pops up throughout the film, of course, getting more and more abusive, and then eventually convinces Billy Crystal, a normal everyday man, that she must die because she's so horrible. So you can imagine Mrs. Lift is a bit of an overbearing mother. Mm-hmm. But this is a delightful movie. I'm going to make you watch this.
Good pick. I've seen it, dude. I have seen it.
Oh, good.
I feel like I'm laughing at a freak a little bit.
It's not like they forced her to be in the movie. She was nominated for an Oscar.
But she's just doing herself, kind of, right?
Well, I can't imagine she was that caustic in real life.
Wasn't she in Goonies, too, or something?
She was. She was Mrs. Something.
She was in like three or four movies, and it was just always the same character.
Well, she had limited range.
Very. Herself.
She goes, what? You know what we got to do? I'm telling you what we got to do this because we got to come up with some good lists.
No.
Top five one-trick ponies. One-trick ponies who do one thing, but they were good at it.
J.B. Smoove.
J.B. Smoove could be a one-trick pony. Yeah.
All right, number four for me.
We'll table that one. Write down low.
Have we done mute characters?
I don't believe we have. How many are there?
A number.
Is a number between one and, say, a million?
Have we done mute characters? How do we figure that out?
Sure, let's do it.
I love producer Logan.
Here's like, a clip.
He just shrugs his shoulders. All right, have we done mute characters?
Got like, me.
I don't think so.
Better.
Do a quick
you know
search.
What? You know what he was doing? He was pretty clever. He was being mute.
Good.
I get it. All right, number four for me. Oh, are you excited about your John Waters marathon that's upcoming? You're probably gonna spend most of the summer watching John Waters film.
Oh no.
Yeah. Including Serial Mom. You're gonna see Serial Mom, 1994 Serial Mom, written and directed by John Waters. This is definitely a satirical film about what really is going on in the life of a suburban mom.
Have not done mute characters.
We have not.
No.
So we should. Kathleen Turner, Sam Watterson, Ricky Lake, and Matthew Lillard star in Serial Mom, which is not
Matthew Lillard
that I can say I enjoyed very much. I think you got to be in the right frame of mind. You got to kind of. I think John Waters is probably best served in a marathon where you watch a bunch of his stuff and you kind of got to ease into it. You
know, sounds exciting.
Certain shows that you got to like watch a couple episodes before you're like in that world. Like, all right. Now I'm in. John Waters, it takes a while. It takes a little while. As I've said before, Pecker is my favorite John Waters movie. Serial Mom is probably in my top 10 of his that I've seen. The storyline is this. Beverly Sutphin? I could be. There's a very good chance that I'm butchering her last name. Sutphin, Beverly, whatever. It doesn't matter. Kathleen Turner plays Beverly. And she kills one of her children's tormentors. And there's going to be a little bit of spoiling here if you've not seen it. But the movie, it doesn't really like... being on Twitter now, I see all the bullshit about me spoiling movies. There's actually a large faction out there that believe that I do more of a disservice with spoiling than you do.
You absolutely do.
It's bizarre to me.
It's 100% true.
Fucking weird to me. But there's also flat earthers out there. So, you know,
it yeah, takes all kinds.
Takes all kinds. All right. How do I do this? All right. You know what? Let's do a little of this. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. So I'm going to do the stopwatch timer. I'm going to go 1 minute.
Oh.
1 minute. Not 1 hour. 1 minute, 30 seconds. When my timer goes off, I will stop talking about this. So if you would like to not hear what I say about Serial Mom, because you really believe you're going to see this film sometime, let your stopwatch hit the fast forward. It's 15 seconds now, right?
I believe so.
Four, five,
depending
six.
On the app you use.
Hit it six times if you use the app that I use. And begin. All right, so I hope you hit that.
You're wasting time. You're wasting time.
A lot of it. Yeah, I realize that.
It's 5 seconds.
We get paid by the minute.
It's 5 seconds.
Kathleen Turner, she's the mother, and her daughters are Ricky Lake, who is too old to be... shut up. Shut your fucking mouth, because it's going to go over, right? And then Matthew Lillard is her son, Chip. And she kills her tormentors, Brian. Like, Chip's a math teacher. I kind of gives him a hard time and says that he... Forget what he calls him, but he says that he's not that bright, and she finds out about this. She's a serial killer, but she chooses her prey. You know, as a mother, a loving mother would. So she goes and she kills the teacher.
That's fair.
And then she also kills the boyfriend of Ricky Lake, her daughter's boyfriend, because he breaks up with her, and then she sees him with another guy, and she goes, oh, I will kill him. And she's convicted, and she's seen, she's being a protective mother. So the thing with, especially at this time, and actually most all of John Waters' early career, is he's obsessed with, it all began with Charlie Manson, I think, and he's just obsessed with the public being obsessed with evildoers, violent aggressors. I set 90 seconds, and it's way too long. I realize I probably should have done more like 30 seconds. Yeah, the spoiling's over, but whatever.
You can still keep talking.
So, hey, look at that. Welcome back. You missed nothing. But yeah, so it's kind of taking a absurd look at that, like, especially by the time you get to the end, which I'm not going to spoil. But it's how we kind of treat our convicted and those that are, you know, do the most heinous acts. Mm-hmm. It all started with his... people misunderstand it as an admiration for Charlie Manson. It was a fascination with Charlie Manson and the lore that kind of surrounded that case.
Okay.
And I think
it was the trial of the century before OJ came around.
And
it still might be.
He rides this wave of the master of bad taste, John Waters does. But I think he's very misunderstood, and he's a lovely, lovely fellow, John Waters. And you're really gonna hate his work as you watch it over the summer.
Oh, good.
I think I might just...
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's because you're not open-minded.
I feel like I'm very open-minded.
No.
No?
No.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
You go to wineries.
I'm open-winded.
That was terrible.
I'm bad. Look, are we recording? I feel like are we plugged in right?
What? What's the problem?
I don't know. So he has the thing plugged into his laptop, but I guess that's for clips. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Don't tell Logan how to do his job. He knows how to do his
Why
job.
Why is something concerned about it?
I don't know. Something felt wrong. All right. I don't know anything now. That's a good thing.
You will have my undying admiration, Brian. Mm. There we go again with the admiration. If it turns out that we did lose this. If somehow
wouldn't
we lost.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would have a whole newfound respect for you.
All right.
If this segment doesn't exist.
Well, it's unlikely. Number three.
You know the best part? This segment won't exist.
Though. So there'll be no one to prove it. Yeah. Damn it. Number three for me. Oscar nominee, 2010. No Oscar winner. The only winner on my list. Sorry about that. I almost messed up. For Melissa Leo as Alice Eklund Ward. Alice Eklund Ward, the mother of Mickey Ward and Dickie Eklund in 2010's The Fighter. Love The Fighter. David O. Russell's The Fighter. Let's just jump right to the clip because this explains very well. She's a very controlling mom. She is Mickey's manager, also Dickie's manager, her two boxing sons. And lest you think a little lady can't be a boxing manager, oh no, she is quite tough. And when her husband dares to suggest that that they get a new trainer, new manager for Mickey, who's a promising fighter at this point, he's just not getting the title fights, and he's just not getting the promotion he deserves. Here is here's a reaction by Melissa Leo.
Come on,
hey,
I hope it hurts.
Salamano is a good man.
Businessman.
What?
Oh my God! You know what that sounds like? He's a crook, George.
He owns a taxi cab company. He's organized that.
Oh my God! He's a cab driver. He knows everything about boxing, right?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think he's gonna steal your son's money and rob him blind.
Why would you think that? Why would you even think that? Why can't you trust anybody?
I know people. I know, George, you think I don't know anything, but I know people.
I know you know people.
And that Sal, Anana, Banana, we don't need that in our lives.
We haven't made $1 with these kids.
You betrayed me.
Nothing for them.
The daughters are in the room.
He's a crook.
What's Mickey supposed to do? Dickie's in jail.
We're not talking about his trainer, sweetheart. We're talking about his manager. That's me.
Yeah, but Mom, maybe Mickey should try something different.
What are you doing opening your mouth in my kitchen? You owe me $200.
I said I was going to pay you next week.
I don't want another word out of you. That was last month you told me 2 weeks. Did you take sides against me in my own house? You owe me money?
You know what? She's just a strong mother.
If she
was a man, if she, that was a dad,
well,
I don't know
the
if you'd
pots
be,
and pans
be saying
be, I think I would. Because,
domineering.
Because she's prone to violence. She rules that house with an iron fist. She doesn't quite see that she isn't the best professional boxing manager out there. And to wit, when they change management, that's when he gets his greatest success.
Can I just say that that's a fantastic movie? I love this movie.
As do I.
And when you hold it up to Silver Linings Playbook, I mean, that was like real and that was engaging. Silver Linings Playbook, just it
such
felt
a
put on
fantasy,
and
yeah.
it felt like a play. Yeah. It felt like a rehearsal.
It insisted upon itself.
It's bizarre that movie got the kind of love and praise just because it had a lot of the same actors, same director. Mm-hmm. However, it just does not sing like
totally
The Fighter.
Agree.
The Fighter
I love
just
The
sings.
Fighter. And there's funny moments too. They call her MTV Girl. Yeah, MTV Girl.
It's such a good movie. It felt real. You know what I mean?
And did we even mention Christian Bale? He's the best part of the movie.
He's the best part.
And a very good movie. It had a lot of good parts.
Yeah, he's by far and away the best part. I default to no, and I was ready to argue. There's no way
I couldn't wrest you away.
All right, number three for me. Here we go. I got a clip for this. Tell me if you know what this clip is from. It's a quick clip because I know how to handle my clips. I don't what I don't do?
What's that?
I don't say I'm going to take this entire scene and play it, or this entire act and record the sound and then give it to Logan.
Okay.
I take a clip.
Well, I do that.
No, you do acts.
Okay. I
feel like I just watched half of The Fighter with my ears.
It's a really good movie.
I haven't given you a shit because I like it. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Hit it.
Stop hurting yourself, Mama!
He's gonna laugh at you. They're all gonna laugh at you.
Look,
it's
me.
Not too late.
Oh, it's Adam Sandler.
Stay here with me.
I don't want to stay with you, Mama.
Look, I'll answer the door and I'll tell him that you're sick. I'll tell him that you changed your mind.
Look. Sit down and be quiet!
I believe that's it. Yeah.
It's a very visual clip.
It's got the they're all gonna laugh at you right there, Brian. All right, which everyone knows, and it is very Sandler because if you're a fan of Sandler in the 90s and you have any of his albums, they got a great they're all gonna laugh at you.
You're talking about Margaret White, played by Piper Laurie and Carrie.
I am. She won Best Supporting Actress. So is she on your list, Brian?
You might hear about her later.
She beat out Sissy Spacek. From the same movie, who played the title role, Carrie.
You would think that she would be
nominated.
More appropriate. No, she won best.
I believe it was supporting, wasn't it?
Yeah, but was Carrie, was Sissy Spacek nominated for best supporting actor?
They both were nominated that year.
Yeah, but I'll bet different categories.
Perhaps.
I'll look it up. I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd make Sissy Spacek supporting, now that you mentioned that. That's a good point.
I'll look it up. Either way, they were both nominated for Oscars, and with Piper Laurie won.
Piper Laurie, who, you know, she's not a household name by any means, but she was fantastic as Margaret White. when she found out that her daughter Carrie, and I'm assuming we're going to hear more about this, so I won't wax, but when she found out that she, the crux, Stephen King wrote Carrie, for those of you who don't know.
It was his first novel.
Most people. Not his very first, was it?
That's what I read. Maybe we're wrong about a lot of things.
Jesus Christ, misinformation over here. Just surprised information. So
best actress for Sissy Spacek.
And best
supporting actress.
See, I read that she beat her out. So that was miswritten. And I read it. Maybe I misread it.
Maybe Sissy Spacek was so good they nominated for best actress, best supporting actress. It'd be unlikely.
I think that'd be unprecedented.
Wait a minute. What is it possible that Sissy Spacek was nominated for a different movie that year and also Best Supporting Actress?
Ooh, now you might be on something. Because Sissy Spacek was the flavor of the year that year. She was right around that time. Badlands and Sissy Spacek was all about it back then. Sissy Spacek, too attractive for Carrie, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
She was kind of pretty in a lot of those scenes. That scene that I just played right there, she's about to go to prom, very attractive girl. Anyways.
Oh, Piper Laurie lost that year to Beatrice Straight from Network. We're all over the place, man.
Doesn't matter.
You know who else was nominated that year? Jodie Foster as Iris.
Best boy. A little piece of chicken. He calls you a little piece of chicken. Talking about taxi driver there. All right, yeah, so she was nominated for Oscar. All right.
Well,
let's just cut. You know what? Let's just edit all
let's
this
edit
and make
all
us
that out.
Somehow, Logan, just go back and work with what you got and make us sound really fucking smart.
So, fun fact, Anderson, she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Really?
Yeah, and she lost to.
Wait, I'm telling you this.
Girl from Network.
All right, so she gets her period. Carrie, again, she's a 16 year old girl. She could be 12. I don't fucking know because I have no idea about anything anymore. And she's in the showers over there with the girls. Very, very, a very titillating scene there.
Easy, buddy.
For Brian is what he was telling me. And she starts bleeding. And they all start throwing tampons at her. And this is where a lot of the...
Aren't they yelling, plug it up?
Yeah, plug it up. They're chanting it. And this is where a lot of the tropey, I think, like Mean Girls and, you know, bullying. I think I don't remember seeing it before Carrie. Carrie is a... Brian De Palma directs. It's a
classic.
I think a lot of our audience probably has not seen Carrie in its entirety, or they might just write it off as a schlocky horror film.
As the remake with Chloe Grace Moretz.
Which is another absurd thing because she's attractive, right?
Chloe Grace?
Yeah.
No, she's too young.
She's like 18 now, dude. Okay. She's a pretty girl. Hot. You can say she's pretty. Brian, stop. Carrie's got to be played by...
Homely.
Charlize Theron as like the monster. You know what I mean?
It helps that she's meek and homely.
So she goes home and her mom, instead of saying, oh, that's terrible, she says, oh, well, you got your period for impure thoughts, because she's a very religious woman, her mom is. And she locks her in,
to beat her, not with a Bible, but with like a pamphlet on like interpretations of the Bible, which is even worse. Like, oh no, this is what the Bible really means. And you can tell it's like to your point earlier, it's a little bit extreme.
Little extreme. She locks her into the praying room, which is like timeout. And yeah,
it's a little closet.
She is she's a little over the top. And I won't say anything more. I guess I'll let you take over for whenever you have it on your list. That's my number three, Carrie. It stands out. One of the first things that popped into my head
when I
came up with this. Yes.
Coming up next.
They'll all laugh at you, Brian.
They will all laugh.
How many times did you hear that in your life?
On the CD or just in life?
In life to you.
Oh, daily. Yeah.
Okay.
But more as like a warning.
I mean, you got people that cared about you.
Yeah. And they knew. Just most things I did would get people laughing at me. Coming up next, we will talk about the top two domineering moms. And again. Last week, you guys.
Yep.
Not last week, but this week. This week. This week
last
is
week
the last. This week is the last week.
The last week to get your Film Vault shirts.
Yes.
The latest in a line of Film Vault shirts. I believe this is the third or fourth,
at least. Yeah.
And yeah. I hate to say that it's our best ever, but it is our best ever.
It is, right? By far.
Definitely our most popular.
So far, yeah.
Thanks to everyone who's clicked through and got one. We appreciate that.
Very sleek design, and it's going to be the most comfortable shirts because we are doing them. We're not outsourcing to a third party.
We're insourcing.
Yeah, we're insourcing. I'm sending them out myself, and I'm doing it with my guy that made my cold cockle shirts down the street from me. I got a good relationship with him. So we're doing this grassroots, guys, and so far, so good.
Yes, we are doing fulfillment. If you get one, it will be licked by one of us. Most likely, Anderson.
There'll be no licking. There might be some Stanley dog hairs on them, though. That does happen sometimes. But yeah, check out the Film Vault over at AndersonandBryan.com is where you can see the sleek design that we have. Logan put it together
over
there.
Nifty design.
And they're going to be the most comfortable yet. and let us know what you would like. We're also taking lady sizes. I don't know if we've been quite
clear
about that.
For the 8%?
But yeah, we can, you know, if you want a ladies medium, ladies small, ladies large, ladies extra large, ladies extra small, we can do all of those. So sure. Anything that works for you. Let's say you got a girlfriend or a wife that hates the show. That'd be a fun gag gift.
Maybe you're going full Tully and getting pregnant.
There, it costs $25. And if you are a Patreon, current Patreon subscriber, you get $5 off of that. So it's like a free month of Patreon. Takes you down to $20. We're not even making a profit there because of the shipping and the cost of the shirt and all that. So just
enjoy the shirt.
Letting the film ball shirt live out in the wild. So thanks, guys, very much.
Indeed. And now back to the show. Welcome back. Time for our top two, respectively. Overbearing Mothers, number two for me. Not a surprise. Piper Laurie, Margaret White, and Carrie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm just jump right to the clip, Anderson, because I actually have a different clip. I'm glad you used the one you did because I was between that and a different one. So this is a little bit earlier. This is the part where, so right when you played your clip, she was getting ready for the prom. Her date was about to arrive, and the mom's like, please, whatever you do, don't do this. And here is where Carrie, a little bit earlier in the film, makes the predictable mistake of asking her mom's permission to go to the prom. And the mom responds, Piper Laurie responds, by throwing water on her face at the dinner table and basically explains that after the sin of menstruation, Anderson, there's only one thing that boys want.
Tommy Ross, and he's a very nice boy, Mom.
No.
And he promised to stop him and
leave
you before him. Me and my men, Mama, I'm accepted,
no,
Mama.
No, no,
I'm accepted, Mama. I'm accepted.
Come to your closet.
No.
After all you've been taught,
everyone in bad, Mama, everything in the sin.
Come to your closet and pray. Ask to be forgiven.
He's a nice boy, Mom. You like him. You really like him, Mama.
Boy. The boys. Yes, the boys. After the blood come the boys, like sniffing dogs, running and slobbering and trying to find out where that smell comes from. Where the smell is, that smell. Listen, I know where they take them. Heck, gosh, I've seen it all right. Well, you're not going.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going.
After the blood come the boys, sniffing.
She's very, primal,
devoted to her beliefs. Do you think
primitive?
Maybe this.
What happened in her childhood or her early formative years that caused her beyond the Bible to believe that the boys come sniffing when she's terribly?
Maybe this is something that everyone already knows about Carrie, but it just dawned on me as I was watching clips again and revisiting. Do you think Piper Laurie, the mother, Margaret White, knew what her daughter was and knew what her daughter was capable of, and was thus attempting to turn her or keep her away from society because he's very reluctant to even let her out the door.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's really well established.
It's not. That's why I thought it was maybe a theory of mine.
If anything, I would think that she thought that it was the devil's work that gave her the telekinesis and she'd be trying to exercise that out of her.
Mm. Hey,
I never read the book. So
I'm going to give you a really...
Stephen King's first book, you know that?
That's what I heard. I'm going to tell you some really fascinating trivia. You're going to love this.
I'm going to look up Stephen King. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to look up Stephen King.
It's very disrespectful. Go ahead. Logan, I'm going to talk to you right now. Fascinating bit of trivia. Piper Laurie was nominated for back-to-back Best Supporting Actress Oscars 12 years apart. She was in The Hustler in 1961, was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, didn't act again until this movie in 1976. Oh, my God, I got the math wrong. 15 years. 1976, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
15 years she took off. The last role that she had and the next role that she took, both nominated for Oscar. That's never going to happen. That'll never happen again.
It's pretty good.
That's amazing.
You know who else has gotten back to back to back?
Mm.
You have any guesses?
Oh, three Oscar nominations in a row?
Yeah.
Probably. Oh, Meryl Streep?
I mean, it might have happened more than once.
So who's your person you think?
James Dean.
Okay.
James Dean. He was in three movies every single time. Every single time he got a nomination.
Giant Rebel Without a Cause and Rio Bravo? No, Giant Rebel Without a Cause.
All But Eve.
All But Eve, that's the one.
East of Eden. No, wait, shit.
No, I think it's East of Eden. I think you're right.
Oh, fuckers. We are not having
Not flaring on all synapses, I can tell you that much.
Mm.
But Piper Laurie, drop that little trivia on someone sometime. She had Oscar nominations 15 years apart in back-to-back movies.
What was her movie after that?
Oh, What You Do After Carrie?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
Guess what? Stephen King's first book?
Hmm?
Carrie.
Was Carrie.
Yeah. Oh, how about that? Who knew? Not me.
Now we
all know. Hey, we're all better. It's the first one that got published. He wrote other books before that. Ended up getting published later.
I think this is the first one that got turned into a film.
But that was the first one. No, that's absolutely not true.
It's not?
I have no idea. I got to tell you, just
so confident.
Just the end of Carrie alone.
The next film was a film called Ruby in 1977.
Nominated. No.
No, but it was a horror film, looks like.
Let me tell you this. The end of Carrie, that nightmare / dream sequence that happens at the very, very end
of the
movie.
That's the denouement.
That is fantastic. That's
Brian De Palma. Top five Dan O'Malls. We got the good ones.
We're just talking about movies. At the end of movies. Can't do that. That's Brian De Palma really firing on all the cylinders and really being like motivated and driven and inspired as a filmmaker. That was actually taught to us in film class. A couple different film classes that I took. They went over that, how they did it, because there was a lot of having actors walk backwards and some really fun stuff going on with the end of Carrie.
Oh.
Brian De Palma's turned into less inspired these days. Sure. But back when he had fire, vim, and vigor.
He was on top of his game.
Number two for me. Oh, 2009, this mom, Mary, who knocks her own daughter out at the frying pan, calls her a dumb bitch, refers to her child as Mongo, short for Mongoloid, Brian.
I understand.
She likes the child. She's even though the child is being given a decent chance at life by the grandmother, she steals the child back because she wants the child Mongo under her roof to collect the welfare.
Collect the checks. Yeah.
Talking about Precious, of course. Monique.
You think she's overbearing? I guess a case can be made.
What else? She throws a TV at her at the bottom
she's
of the
stairs. She's abusive at the very least.
This woman, and then I can't spoil it, I guess. Damn it. What, I want to talk about
spoil
like,
about this thing?
I want to talk about the reason why she hates her, which comes out at the end.
Oh,
Here's another movie that kind of like Tully, it upsets me because I kind of love this movie. I just didn't like the execution of it.
Right.
Gabourey Sidibe, fantastic as Precious. But the rest of the movie just kind of felt schlocky.
It's based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
I understand that. But I just don't feel like it was really, maybe it was a budget thing. It didn't have that. It had great performances, but many times it felt after school special. Mm. And that upsets me because it's such a harrowing story, right?
It's one of those movies, 2009, you said?
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that I feel like if I saw it again today, I saw when it came out, not an enjoyable watch, but compelling, like you said. I feel like if I saw it again today, I would remember a lot of things I didn't like about it, but with time, all I remember is the very powerful performances. That's almost all I remember.
I bet if we saw it, like if it came out this year.
Would you give Sniff Tracks to this?
If it came out this year, it'd probably be your favorite film of the year.
That's my favorite guess. Film?
Yeah.
I don't know about
I'm
that.
I'm just taking a guess.
Oh, I don't know about that.
The way you are.
What does that mean?
So, all right, fast forward 30 seconds starting now if you don't want to hear me explain the
what
real
about our poor friend on the bike?
Wait, he hasn't seen Precious. All right, here we go. 30 seconds.
I love your rationale.
Remember this, Brian. Remember this. Watch this. Remember why she she explains
who
why she hates her so much. Why she gives Precious her own daughter so much shit. Very jealous because Precious got banged by her husband,
by her guy,
by her by Precious's father.
That's right.
And you took my man.
Who?
Horrible.
Who's gonna love me?
Horrible.
Yeah.
Deplorable. Human beings, man. They can be ugly.
That's right.
She is very domineering. She is not the most domineering, but she's domineering.
That's right.
Oh, one more.
I wouldn't have chosen this one because I look at her more as abusive, but yeah, of course she's a domineering mother. She's overbearing.
You know, I left some off that were obvious. Like, I can't imagine Mommy Dearest being on your list because, you know, it's kind of a comical portrayal, and the wire hangers thing gets a lot of mileage. Right. And she didn't really care that much for the daughter at all. Like that. Like she
overbearing is a different thing.
Yeah, it is a different thing. But Monique or
does she
or
even
Mary,
like her daughter?
She doesn't, but she needs her for the welfare, right?
She likes the checks that come in.
And I think she likes the competition. We're talking about Mary now from Precious. Whereas I think the Joan Crawford character played by Faye Dunaway was more just like,
over
she's
the top.
In my way,
yeah, caricature.
And I'm going to use, I don't know. I'd have to see them back to back to really give it a, this week that I'm having.
What a fun watch that would be.
Yeah, I'm not going to do
that. Yeah, you're not going to do
that. I'm not going to do that.
Number one for me.
Precious and Mommy Dearest. I just saw Mommy Dearest for the first time a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I've actually never seen the whole thing, believe it or not.
That doesn't
shock
me.
Not very good.
I believe it.
We got like 20% of Rotten Tomatoes.
I believe it. People are a little harder. She gave it her all.
Indeed. Number one for me. I'm going back, Anderson. Remember back in the film, the early film vault days when there were only 12 films that I'd seen more than 12. There were 12 that I talked about.
Yes.
There's one of the original 12.
Oh no.
I'm going back.
Terminator.
And aliens. I had to break the glass on this one because it's so perfect. I think it's the archetypal, overbearing mother. And as much as I do make an effort these days to not talk about the same films, it's Romy and Michelle. Let's talk about the same films that I used to talk about.
I used
all
to
the
give
time.
You so much shit about this
That's
one.
A great movie.
I remember the Loveland Studios when we were doing this
show. The Manchurian
show,
like, Candidate.
It was a podcast.
Come on.
This was your show.
Angela Lansbury is Mrs. Iceland in The Manchurian Candidate.
I have it on my also-ran because it's a fantastic pick.
It is.
And I would have been a little bit surprised if it wasn't on your list.
It's my number one. It's 1962 film by John Frankenheimer. Of course, Frank Sinatra, Lawrence Harvey, Janet Leigh, and of course, Angela Lansbury, Oscar nominee. That year, what a movie, and longtime listeners of Film Vault will recognize my love of this movie. But yes, Mrs. Iceland is a co-conspirator against the United States. She is conspiring to have a politician assassinated, and wouldn't you know it, her son gets involved and does that to her. Oh no, she plans this will be carried out and there will be revenge. And on top of that, she's just an overbearing mom anyway. Like, before she even comes to this knowledge, you see her forbidding him to date this girl that he looks at beneath her and says, no, you'll not be following her to New York. You will be staying here with me. Controls her son's life in every way imaginable once he becomes the Manchurian candidate. And actually, no, he's not the Manchurian candidate. It's the stupid husband. Anyhow, he is her son, Lawrence Harvey. The mom is Angela Lansbury. It's a fantastic movie. Where can people stream this? I need to look this up.
Watch the original.
Oh, for God's sake, don't watch the remake. Well, just a pale imitation. Logan, want to hear about the also-rans while we are the listener top fives?
I guess sure. I don't get to do my number one, I guess.
Oh, you're after me. Jeez.
To the point that Logan's just right on, like, yeah, let's do it.
You can rent this on Amazon or iTunes or Microsoft if you're into that kind of thing. $4, well worth it. This is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Number one for me.
Sorry.
Now, I might get some shit because this is not a narrative feature film. This is a documentary.
Oh.
However, I couldn't leave Dee Dee Blanchard off the list because she's the most domineering mother I've ever seen on the screen.
Is this Mommy Dead and Dearest?
In person, Mommy Dead and Dearest, 2017, very recent. Aaron Lee Carr directs Mommy Dead and Dearest. If you have not seen Mommy Dead and Dearest, like I said,
normally
it's a documentary.
I'd give you a lot of shit for not having a real film on
How
there.
How can you not have this?
This is bullseye.
When I was thinking Mother's Day, we should do something for the moms. And then I thought, oh, but it's not some moms, you know what I'm saying?
Some moms.
And I thought of this movie and I'm like, you know what we should do is domineering moms. I hesitate to say anything to even like say, you know, fast forward. I'm going to talk about this for 90 seconds because it's so good. I think most of our listeners have not seen Mommy Dead and Dearest. It's a good movie. I would suggest you bring your mom some candy, like chocolate and flowers on Sunday. And you don't want to go out to the restaurants because it's going to be crowded. Just if she's got HBO Go, I believe you can watch it on there. It's an HBO documentary. And just say, Mom, we're going to watch a movie. And you guys can snuggle in. And you can watch Mommy Dead and Dearest, and it's spelled properly, not like the Mommy Dearest. It's spelled M-O-M-M-Y. M-O-M-M-Y, Dead and Dearest. Not the most memorable title. However, one of the more memorable stories. It involves Munchausen syndrome by proxy and lies being told, some money being stolen from foundations that I care much about, such as the Ronald McDonald House. Lots of money.
There is embezzling.
A lot of embezzling.
There is fraud.
There is murder. This is a fantastic fucking story. And I have my wife to thank for it because she's the one who suggested that we watch it. And I was a little bit anti. And the less you know going in, the better. It's like so many movies, especially this one. Like you just don't, you're not really sure what the hell's going on. And to watch it unfold. But domineering, this is the definition of domineering.
It is hard to believe it actually happened.
Used that daughter. Or that there's a relationship. Obviously, it's the mother where, you know, she's like a puppet. She's just a proxy to get what she wants. There are strings being pulled. And there is very little life being lived by
that
one
is,
of the characters.
That is as overbearing as it gets. Good call. I didn't think about that.
And I almost talked myself out of it because there's so many good also-rans.
Yeah.
Because it's a documentary and I kind of give you shit like that when you have a documentary on the list. However, I thought about it. Can we do a top five domineering moms and documentaries? Can't do it. Can't be its own list. So fuck it.
Yeah, you're right. This wouldn't, yeah, not enough to sustain.
Logan just got up and walked away from the console and Blues Logan's News, which so. I appreciate.
Logan's not doing so well.
I can feel my sickness coming on, dude. It sucks. Yeah.
I'm not sick. This is just a really bad allergy season.
Easy, you know, buddy.
I like to think that that's the case for me. All right, so that's me. My number one is Mommy, Dead, and Dearest. But yeah, I think this would be a fun one to watch with your mom on Cole Cocker with it.
Yeah.
On Mother's Day.
That's right.
Box of chocolates, you know, flowers.
Don't tell her the title. I'm going to watch a documentary.
Oh, sure. The title might give it away.
Yeah.
I want to watch a movie about a mom.
Yeah, it's about a mom and a daughter.
Yeah.
Close relationship. Won't be lying.
Very close Very relationship. Close. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'll do the listener stuff.
You know what? Your mom probably would like it. It might make you, it made me appreciate my parents a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Tell True. You that. The things they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number five from the listeners. Norma Bates from Psycho.
Cheap.
Number four.
Only a mom.
Eddie's mom from It.
Good call. I was almost on my list.
Very recent, but very good call. Yes. She's like the tame version of it, but very good. Yes.
Number three is Ann Ramsey and Throw Mama from The Train.
Yeah, boy.
Number two, Mama Boucher from Waterboy.
Kathy Bates.
It's number two. And the number one overbearing mother, as voted on by our listeners, is Piper Laurie in Carrie.
Good call.
Shit.
Good call. Too recent, but I wanted very much to go with Kumail's mom in The Big Sick. Remember, she tries to arrange his marriage. And it was a small role, but we never talk about Bended Like Beckham, and the mom in that was very domineering.
Bended Like Beckham?
That's right.
I love that movie, and I love saying it that way, even though it's probably frowned upon.
A small role, but memorable, and one that came out late, and man, I almost put it on the list, was Dirk Diggler's mom from Boogie Nights. You know, see a little whore?
That's true.
You know, see a little whore? She wouldn't like let him leave. Kristen Scott Thomas from Only God Forgives, not a memorable film, but she was very domineering.
Wow, that's true. She really, really was.
Aunt Martha from Sleepaway Camp. She,
his hands are inside her stomach by the time it's over.
She made little Angela dress up as someone she wasn't.
Who is this? What movie?
Aunt Martha from Sleepaway Camp.
Yes. You like and to go back course, to that well.
Karen's mom from Goodfellas. Is he
Karen.
Jewish? My daughter tells me you're half Jewish.
Just the only the good.
Where, half. Where have you been? Where have you been? Who stayed out all night?
All right, I got some more also rans. Animal Kingdom, Jackie Weaver. She was also up for a supporting actress, if you recall, from Animal Kingdom.
Of course, yes.
As Smurf, Janine Smurf Cody. Very dramatic movie, but I like that Animal Kingdom. I don't love it, but I love it. I like it. Black Swan, Barbara Hershey as Erica in Black Swan. Remember how she almost
made she was on a lot of lists that I looked up.
Wild at Heart, Laura Dern's mother, actual real life mother in that. I just have Wild at Heart. It needs to be banned. It's on the list. Manchurian Candidate, Mommy Dearest, Bad Boy Bubby. I almost brought this back into the fold. It's been a while since we talked about Bad Boy Bubby, but Bad Boy Bubby was not allowed to leave the house. He's a grown man. His mother, the bitch that she was, would say, hey, the air outside is poisonous. She can never leave. And
that's overbearing.
He didn't leave. It's a disturbing. You seen that Bad Boy Bubby? All right.
Is that your last?
Got that. You're going to enjoy that Bad Boy Bubby one day.
Oh, no.
Also, Brian, this will upset you a little bit. I, Tonya.
Boom.
That's an overbearing mom. Good call.
Boom.
Good call.
Yeah, it's just a little too recent. But yeah, you know what? Hey, if you're a lady, an aspiring actress, and maybe you're a little, you know, short in the tooth, that kind of thing. You're a little young.
Wet behind the ears.
Wet behind the ears, but you would like to get an Oscar
short
nod.
In the tooth.
It works, right? Yeah. One day.
Yeah. Your time's not up.
Start thinking about being an domineering mother at some point, because seems like every other other domineering mother portrayed in cinema gets a nomination.
It does feel like it's a sweet spot.
I wonder if that's just more men hating women. It's like, yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, that's what I see. That's what I see in my mom.
That's why I like it, because I hate the chicks so much. That's why
I'm such a misogynist.
Absolutely.
All right, Logan, let's gamble and get the... we tied last week.
Yeah, you did. Last week, you gambled on Tully. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 93%, and you both bid 71.
Shit.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Tully has gone down to 86%.
2-1.
Way too high. Way too high.
So Logan won.
All right.
So what happened there is Brian and I both picked the same number. So
brutal.
Because of that, Logan wins.
Yes, rare exception or the rare instance of a tie, Logan will assign us both a film.
It happens once every like 3 or 4 months.
I'm going to go easy on you this week. You get a movie that's streaming currently on Netflix. It's actually a Netflix original movie.
What is it?
Nope.
Are you guys fans of the show Workaholics?
Love it.
A couple months ago, the creators and stars of the show
such a Logan pick.
Released their first feature film.
Of course they did.
Game Over Man.
Yeah.
That's what you have to watch.
Love it.
Do you have to be stoned to enjoy?
No, not really.
It helps.
Not
it's
really.
A, it's kind of a take on Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. All right, I'll be seeing that.
Thank you, Logan. At least it's easy to come by, but fuck.
You sound enthusiastic. All right, what are we gambling on this week?
You seen the Childish Gambino?
What?
Donald Glover's music video?
Yeah.
See that?
It's great.
Pretty enjoyable.
Pretty great.
Pretty enjoyable. Actually, I was hoping that's what you're going to assign us.
You just got to watch that about 20 times until it adds up to 90 minutes.
It's a fucking catchy song. That's I can
reasonable.
Do that.
It's reasonable.
This is all America. Right.
This week you're gambling on Life of the Party.
Isn't there a bigger film coming out?
That's the one Solo. I chose.
Solo's coming out, Brian.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's just the premiere tonight.
It's not coming out this weekend?
Out in a couple
I
weeks.
Saw the nerds in line, so I just assumed.
I thought it was coming out this week.
It comes out in a couple weeks.
Nerds are in line.
Life of the Party. This is the... Oh, fuck.
You know what I'm doing right after we leave here?
What's that?
I'm going to drive by that line, and I'm going to yell.
You should drive through
they're already
line.
Gone. They're watching the movie right now.
They'll be lined up afterwards.
I was supposed to be there tonight.
I can't
nope,
do my
I can't.
Patented.
I gotta go do my podcast. Blast.
Right,
I gotta
do
yell.
A very successful podcast.
Star Trek sucks. Upsets him so much.
I should be in a tuxedo right now, walking a red carpet.
Don't be fucking lame, Logan. Please.
Life of the
We've
Party.
Talked about
looks
this.
Pretty good.
What does this remind me? Life of the fucking party.
It's
I
a new
this.
Melissa McCarthy vehicle.
Oh my god! Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How could you? It was on your top five for the summer. How could you forget?
Her VJ. She talks about her vagina being in the Google. Yeah. It's really funny. This looks really, really funny.
The trailer's full of laughs, so I can only assume extrapolating the whole film is wall-to-wall laughter.
It's like Back to School, but with a new twist. A woman this time. And a daughter.
Back to Beauty School.
Oh, I get what you're saying there, because bras should be in beauty school, nothing more.
Looking at Logan's reaction. Shit.
Ready?
All right, what's your number?
43. 33. All right. I feel good.
All right. Currently, the week before release, with just 52 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for Life of the Party is at 37%.
Fucking right cheating
between.
Prick.
That's right in between.
Cheating prick. You're in the 30s.
It's 37.
I just picture a lot of critics going, you know what? It's about a woman who's free and she's going
it's
back to school.
It's for Mother's Day. I'm probably going to have to go see it for Mother's
no.
Day.
No.
Yeah, my mom likes to go see
RGB.
Bad movies.
Go see RGB. She'll love it. She'll cry.
She's not
I wonder,
documentary fan.
She'll cry.
With MoviePass, it's like it's going to die soon, right?
It's already on its way out.
And I think that what's going to happen there is there's going to be a real big drop off, right? With movie, because I feel like a lot of people who do kind of casually go see movies probably just recently got MoviePass and they're like, you know, kind of keeping up.
Sure.
And then once it goes under, it's like those people are going to be like, fuck, I forgot how much movies actually cost. That's and right. Now I got to pay for them again. Now it's really
Once you start offering,
maybe that was the fucking end game.
It was like Netflix put it out to topple the whole
yes.
thing.
Yes.
Wow. That would be quite an elaborate.
Because I have not been able to wrap my mind around this business model. Because I'm not a businessman by any means, but this has not made sense from the get-go. Right. Maybe this is it.
It's a little conspiracy theory-ish.
Cost a couple hundred mil, yeah, but sure. It's maybe but worth it over the long haul.
The long con is going to work out for you.
But what I hope happens if that does happen is that the quality of movie just comes up. Like they just say, we can't make these kinds of pieces of horse shit. Because people aren't going to spend $15 when they can get 2 months worth of Netflix for that.
True.
Why would you spend $15 for one person, one night, one showing of Melissa McCarthy talking about her gavoogle or whatever the fuck?
As opposed to, you know, millions of TV shows and movies to choose from.
All right.
Unbelievable. Hey, thanks you guys for listening. Thanks to Zoe A for the fan art this week. Zoe made some art, sent it in, and now it's featured at the top of Anderson and O'Brien. I don't know about this. Oh no.
The human sent a
three horse.
Oh, three horse.
I don't like that at all. Why am I the middle?
That's Zoe. That's Zoe Ace from Portland.
Thanks, Zoe.
She helped me find the venue up there, Clinton Theater in Portland. Nice.
Check that out, AndersonandBryan.com. One more week to buy t-shirts, you guys. Orders close May 20th.
May 20th.
And then we'll be sending those out. You'll get a little Stanley hair in your package if you're lucky.
You shouldn't.
Anderson and Brian's where you go for those. It's where you go to see the featured art. It's where you go to link to our featured artist this week. Music brought to you by the Subway Surfers, the Lion-Faced Boy, the Maladies of Adam Stokes, Ingratitude, the Smug Saints, and Ben Yonda and Brian Heenan.
We'll be able to hear all of the featured artists next week. Imagine very excited. We have not been hearing music for the last, 2 months now?
And thanks to everyone who went through and bought us a t-shirt already. You helped us get a new mixer. So we'll be hearing things such as music and probably music.
Mostly music.
Yes, Patreon. Subscribe if you'd like to. Hear the extended spoiler thoughts on Tully. And
go off on Tully.
But there are thoughts. There are thoughts.
And
has so many thoughts come from such a small part of the film.
It is pretty small, but it's a big. It's like talking like an M. Night Shyamalan. You know what I mean, it's like you could spend 20 minutes talking about the end of any of
it. That's true. In that sense, it's true. Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault on both. Vote on our top fives and send us your top five ideas. We use them all the time. And till next time.
All right, June 2nd.
Easy, buddy.
June 2nd.
No, Logan's got to go.
I got to go. June 2nd. 3 weeks from tomorrow night as this comes out. Come out and see me.
For the big night. For Bruce Pereira. And here we go. We do it for Van Gogh. But you better get to know. Hold your breath and move real slow. Forget your name.